Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and a very warm welcome to Radio Islam International. You are listening to Productive Muslima with me, Suraya Chauhan. Now, I was reading something very interesting recently, that for every person who took an antidepressant in 1987, there are now more than 5 people. So according to Clinical Depression UK, major depression is a huge problem and it's growing. So it's the number one psychological disorder in the Western world. So I thought to myself, is it that depression is more common, or is it just that people are more willing now to seek help than before? So there's a lot that I needed answered, and I'm sure many of you too, since very often we meet people that are suffering with depression. So to answer our question, lots of questions, we have Hanifa Ibrahim, who's a psychologist. She's in private practice for the past 10 years. She's a mom of 4. She works with both adults and children. She works in a variety of settings, hospital, NGO, corporate, employee and wellness sector. And she works extensively with trauma, anxiety and depression. So our lines will be open for any questions or input. Call us on 011-854-1548. We will be really happy to take your calls or your questions. So without any further ado, let's welcome our guest, Hanifa Ibrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam, Suraya, and thank you for having me on the show. It's a real privilege to be able to share some of my knowledge and understanding of depression with you and your callers, your listeners.
Alhamdulillah. Hanifa, let's start off right at the top, right? What is depression?
Okay. I think the first thing that we need to talk about is what it's not. We all, as human beings, experience moments in our lives when we feel down, or we have a challenge and our mood's affected, or we have one of those blue days. Depression is not one of those days, although often we would say, I'm feeling so depressed today, I'm so overwhelmed, I hope this feeling goes away. It often, those moods last for a day or two, and we realize, our mood or things will normalize eventually. So depression is not those days. Depression is a clinical disorder. Like diabetes or like cancer, it has symptoms, it has signs, and it's a mental health illness. And so these symptoms and signs are there for doctors and professionals to diagnose. And we'll talk more about the symptoms and signs. But depression is a clinical condition, and it is something that's diagnosable. It's not just one or two days of feeling down.
Okay, so that's just a myth when they say that everyone is depressed at some sort of some stage of their life.
Well, we all experience feelings of being low, but not all of us experience depression in its true form. Okay.
Okay, so if I'm just sitting, I have a blue day, the weather puts me off, and that day I don't want to speak to anyone, I wouldn't call it depression.
No, it's just a down day. I would call it a down day, or a day where you're just not feeling up to doing the things that you would normally do. And we all have those down days, but it's not depression.
Okay. So you say it is a clinical disorder like diabetes or anything else. So what is the cause? What's the reason for depression?
Okay. So I think we need to understand that firstly, it's not one specific thing that causes depression. It's a complex combination of things. Some of us do have a genetic predisposition to depression. So someone in our history or in our family, somewhere along the line, has had depression, and therefore this puts us at risk of becoming depressed. But it doesn't mean that we have a genetic predisposition that we are definitely going to become depressed. It means that if there's a trigger for it, so for example, if you're going through a trauma, or if you have a death in the family, or you have numerous traumas, you might find that you're more likely to become depressed, where someone else might not necessarily become depressed after having gone through that. So there is a genetic component, but we also got to remember that there's also a psychosocial stressor. So we are living in an environment that's really stressful. Our lives are fast-paced. Some of us have more support than others. And this also puts us at risk of becoming depressed. Okay. I don't know if that explains it to you in a clearly enough way.
Yes.
Okay.
No, definitely it does. So, when you say it can be genetic, right? So, someone who has, like, say, parents or grandparents that had suffered with this, and they obviously more prone to it. So, would it definitely happen to them?
Not necessarily, like I said to you. It would depend on the stresses and the triggers and their lifestyle that would impact on them becoming depressed. It's not necessarily, but there is a predisposition. Okay, some of us do have that.
So why does it only then affect some people and not others? Say, like, I've been through a trauma, right? And say I've lost a child.
Yes.
And my friend as well has lost a child.
Yes.
Why is it then that only, say, I would be depressed and she wouldn't?
So you remember the genetic component, right, on the one hand? On the other hand, there's also, you must remember that there are also different, we all have different coping mechanisms, okay? So our age might determine or impact on how we deal with things. So if you're 20, you might deal with things very differently from a 50-year-old person. Our support structures, so some of us have very good support structures and others don't. You might also, your personality is that some of us talk our feelings and our emotions out, and it makes it easier for us to express what's inside of us, and that helps. And others just suppress it. And our perceptions of the world and ourselves also would impact on how we see things. So therefore, all of these combination of factors would determine who would become depressed and who wouldn't become depressed. It's not so clear cut as saying, okay, because you have this, you will become that. Okay, so there's a host of and a combination of things.
Okay, yeah, that does make sense, because I guess when you say some people like talking about it, it does help, and others don't like speaking about it. But then could it be true when people say, okay, snap out of it, it's your state of mind, because some people deal with it, they're stronger and some are not. Would it be fair to say something like that?
I think we must also remember that it's a chemical imbalance in the brain, okay? So depression is a chemical imbalance in the brain. Once it's diagnosed, it means that there's some chemical there are certain chemicals in the brain that help to stabilize the mood, right? So you have serotonin and dopamine that really help us to stay, keep our mood stable and for us to feel elated from time to time and happy and content. But what happens is that when we go into a state of depression, these chemicals are out of balance. So what happens is that once we're immersed in it, it's like being in a dark black hole, you know, of constant symptoms. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about those symptoms. But you're in these symptoms, and your body is physiological already. So it's not so easy to just say, read this book and you're going to be better. Or let's just listen to 10 motivational speakers. Once the chemistry is affected, it becomes very difficult to just snap out of it. So depression is a clinical disorder that's marked by these imbalances in the brain. And there's no specific test that can really say, hey, you've got so much serotonin or so much dopamine in your brain, because we can't test what chemicals are in the brain.
Yes.
So we basically have to go with these symptoms to actually understand who's depressed and who's not depressed. So let me talk a little bit about these symptoms, if that's okay with you.
Okay, before you give us
okay.
the symptoms, Hanifa, we have a caller on the line. It's Zahra. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Very interesting program. I would like to find out if one worries constantly, can that lead to depression?
Zahra? Yes, worry is not definitely not a healthy thing to be doing. It can lead not only to depression but to various illnesses, because the body takes strain and it takes its toll on the body. But remember, we need to meet a certain criteria of symptoms to be diagnosed with depression. But yes, it can lead to depression if one ruminates all the time and worries constantly about things.
Good. Shukran. Zakala.
Assalamu alaikum. Okay, so Hanifa, you were going to tell us about the symptoms of depression.
Yeah. Okay, so depression is something that doesn't last for, it's not something that we diagnose, say, if you're feeling these symptoms for a day or two or 3 days. You have to experience some of these symptoms, if we're talking about major depression, for at least 2 weeks. But these symptoms need to be persistent, almost all the time, almost every day. Okay, so not only is it just having a depressed mood, but also it could be marked by having a loss of interest in pleasurable activities. So for example, if you were a person who loved to read, or you were a person who loved to play sport, and suddenly you just don't have that energy to get out there and to go and go and do those things, that might be one of the symptoms of depression. So the depressed mood and feeling of sadness, emptiness, hopelessness, those are also part of the mood and part of the disorder. Also, you'll find that people might lose significant amount of weight without even dieting or trying to lose the weight.
Yes.
Or they gain a significant amount of weight. So they're not, they're just eating, or what we call comfort eating, constantly to fill that void. Some people just feel like they can't eat, they have no appetite. Then also sleep can be affected. So some people, you'll find that they sleep too much, where they just want to sleep all the time. Or you'll find that they even sleep too little. They're insomniac, so they can't sleep at all. You also find that, I mean, they can have a loss of energy, so really, really tired, no energy to do anything, don't want to get up. But remember, there are people out there who do get up, and they have to get up, so they do get up and they do what they need to do, but they can also be depressed. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. It's also marked by your thought patterns of feelings of worthlessness, or feeling guilty all the time, or feeling just feeling terrible about yourself. Also, you struggle to concentrate, or you become indecisive, difficulty making decisions. And there's also one symptom that, I mean, is a clear indicator that there's something wrong. There's recurrent thoughts of death. Not just death is in, you know, Islamically we need to think about death all the time. It's thinking of suicide, thinking of wanting to just give up, thinking of ways of doing it, you know, going out and sorting out your finances or whatever it might be, so that you can make a plan to end your life. So it's an active way. And because Islamically we think, I mean, lots of people will feel terrible about thinking about suicide. They will actually not tell you that they're doing that.
Yes,
and it's suppressed.
That's the thing that I think most people are suffering with at the moment, is that we don't actually know that they have these thoughts until it actually happens.
Exactly. And it's because of that, you know, that Islamic or that fear that, you know, I'll be judged, or someone will think I'm not Muslim enough, or I don't have enough hope in Allah, or that's why I can't tell someone that I'm thinking about this. But also remember, when the chemical imbalance in the brain is there, it can result in us thinking about these things, just wanting to end it, just wanting to give up. And it's real.
You can understand when a trauma has led to depression, because obviously you've lost something dear to you, or not necessarily lost something, maybe you've been through a financial difficulty or whatever. Could you maybe just feel depressed for no reason, like no trauma happened? Okay, wait, hold that thought.
Okay.
We have another caller on the line.
Sure.
It's Aisha. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Aisha.
Okay. Is she still on?
No, no. I couldn't.
Yes. Let's just try Aisha again. Is she... Assalamu alaikum. Okay, I think the call was dropped. So I was saying that... I forgot what I was saying. Okay, I was saying that does it have to be a trauma, or do people just feel depressed for absolutely no reason?
Okay. Look, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be a trauma. Remember, we also, like I said to you, if there's a genetic predisposition, it could be triggered by a life event that might not be as dramatic. It could be triggered by an event, if there is a genetic predisposition. But also our appraisal, so how do I see this event, how do I make sense of this event, would also impact on would it become a depression or not.
Okay. Okay, I think we have Aisha back on the line. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And how are you, ladies?
Alhamdulillah.
Okay. I am suffering from this depression for a very, very long time. In the 80s, you can say, I'm on medication. And they have changed my medication. I don't know if you know much of medication. Because when I take the medication, the whole day I can't function.
Yeah.
But towards the evening, I'm a bit okay.
Okay.
Yeah. And like you just mentioned, all the symptoms that you have, no concentration, no lust to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long am I going to carry on like this. I'm already so old. I don't know if I should say it or not. I don't think I should.
You can speak. It doesn't matter. You can speak.
Yeah. No, you know... I'm a divorcee and I live on my own.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if that is important for the, what you call it.
Look, I think for recovery, medication does play a role. We know that in certain instances the medication is necessary.
Can you speak a bit louder, please,
okay.
Michael?
Aisha, in certain instances, we do know the medication is necessary, especially with severe depression. Like you said, it's been there for a long time. But also we know that medication is not the only thing that's going to help us. We need other sources of support that's going to help us to manage the depression.
I try very hard, but like to be with people and to be around people, but then you just don't get that urge to do it, you know.
It's almost like you need to force yourself, Aisha, that you have to push yourself to get to be around people. So on the one hand, you know that that's what you need to do, but on the other hand, there's no lust and feeling for it, and it makes you feel stuck in some way.
I just can't get forward.
I hear you. And I hear that they've changed your medication a few times. So sometimes the medication...
No, I was for quite long on this clomazepine, Trivotril. Now they change it because recently I felt very sick,
Yeah.
And then they change it to Mylan olanzapine, 5 milligrams and 2.
Yeah.
2 tablets of olanzapine, 10 milligrams. Yeah. At night.
So
when I get up in the morning, I just don't function.
Yeah.
But I do have a good shower, and I dress up in whatever I have to do, that I do finish.
You know, like I said to you, the other thing that's very important is that sometimes we not only need the medication, but we need therapy as well. We need some sort of psychotherapy so we learn other coping mechanisms to help us to deal with the illness itself.
Yes. So how do I go about it
So psychotherapy, when I talk about psychotherapy, I'm talking about seeing a therapist or a psychologist or someone, a professional, who deals with depression so that we can learn some coping mechanisms, understand the illness a little better. Because once, the medication only works on certain parts of the brain, and then we also need to learn how to cope and to do things to help us.
In fact, I did life skills many years ago.
Yeah.
With the Lanesha Clinic,
But
now I don't know, it has gone very worse again, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I won't be able to talk very long, right?
Fine, Aisha.
Okay,
fine,
I'll listen on air.
No problem.
Assalamu alaikum.
Okay. So, Sireya, when it comes to medication, I think medication it has its place, okay? And for severe depression, we need the medication to help replenish some of those hormones that are out of balance and out of sync. But not only do we need medication, psychotherapy, that is seeing a psychologist or a clinical social worker or a psychiatrist who does some counseling, so that it can help us to learn new coping mechanisms and understand the illness, is very, very important as well. For those who are not going to be on the medication forever, we know that at some point they're going to stop the medication, but there's no point in stopping the medication when you don't have coping mechanisms in place.
Yes, and I gather from the previous caller, she sounds helpless, she's tried everything, and how long is she going to go? So it tells you that the medication is only there, maybe to numb you. Is it to numb you?
No, it's not. Sometimes the medication does have a little bit of a numbing effect. So what it does is that it does allow us not to feel as intense tearfulness or as intense sadness. So it does have a little bit of that effect, but the idea behind it is not for numbing. The idea is also to get the neurotransmitters in the brain replenished. So that in 6 months' time or in 3 months' time, when we stop the medication, you don't go into a relapse state. You don't relapse again.
Okay, Hanifa, I think we'll go for a quick ad break. If you can stay with us on the line, we'll continue after the break.
Okay.
After the break, inshallah, I think they'll call you back, or you can just stay online.
No problem, I'm online.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back to the program Productive Muslimah. We have our guest speaker online, Hanifa Ibrahim, who's a clinical psychologist. So Hanifa, before the break, we were speaking about medication, and as you said, medication is not just, sometimes you need more than just medication. Are there any alternative methods to healing depression?
Today I'm a counseling psychologist, just to clarify, not a clinical, but
okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Are there alternative methods? The two methods that we predominantly use is medication and psychotherapy. So the psychotherapy is seeing a psychologist or a trained professional 1 hour once a week at least. Sometimes in severe cases, we need to see the patient more than once a week. And in there are different types and approaches to psychotherapy depending on the therapist that you are going to see. I'm not going to go in depth into that. But these are the two most important aspects in treating depression. The other important aspect that can be used is the use of support groups, talking to people who have similar illnesses and getting to know and understand your illness better through this mechanism. But ideally it's therapy and medication.
Okay, Hanifa, coming back to the medication, we have a question. What are the side effects of medication? And does medication work for everyone or only some people? Because when we speak about the side effects, as I mentioned, some of the side effects are numbing. I don't know whether it's a side effect, if you can call it that. But other people say that there's no feeling. Like you feel nothing. It takes out. So previously you would feel the depression. Here you feel nothing. So what are the side effects besides these?
I'd like to clarify. There is a bit of not that you feel nothing. You feel, but you don't feel the intensity of what you perhaps previously had felt. Okay, so that side effect, or what we call numbing, is that it's not as intense, but there is feeling. It's not that there's no feeling at all, if we're talking about major depression. But there are other side effects that you might find depending on the type of medication that you're taking. So you might have dry mouth, some people have constipation or diarrhea. Some people have weight gain. Some people have sexual issues that sometimes come up. But nonetheless, most of the depending on the medication that you're taking, these side effects, after a period of time, they start to get better. So when your body is adjusting to the medication because the medication starts to work, you'll find that you will have these side effects, but they last for a week or two, maybe even a month, and then they start to wear off. If they persist, that's when we go back to our psychiatrist and we say, you know what, or your doctor, and you say, these are side effects are quite severe, we need to change it. So it's kind of, we need to play around with the medication, or psychiatrists or doctors need to play around with the medication until we find the right combination for you, okay? So example, if you have a flu, you go to the doctor, you might take something for the flu, an antibiotic, and it doesn't work, and then the doctor gives you something else because that's not clearing up your nasal congestion. Similarly, with antidepressants, it's not a magic wand that's just going to make you happy overnight. And it doesn't make us happy. It just stabilizes our mood. So if you think that we're going to take the medication and you're going to feel elated and be bouncing off the walls, it's not going to be like that. It just stabilizes the mood so you don't slip into that sinking, dark space.
You need to take maybe like vitamins or omega. Can that help? Because some people say it does.
No, it can help and it does play a role, but remember, we don't have any research that is scientific research that's showing us that omegas clear depression. So yes, you can. Omegas have we know omegas in certain vitamins play a huge role in feeling healthy, but we need to know, but based on scientific research, this is what I can give you. The homeopathic side, yes, we can use that, but I can't guarantee it's going to clear your depression.
Okay. Does it help, though?
Absolutely. There is a place for vitamins, there's a place for treatment, certain foods, there's a place for exercise, there's a place for diet. All of that plays a huge role because it links to lifestyle. And if we have a healthier lifestyle, we're definitely going to put ourselves less at risk for getting depressed. Mm-hmm. So that's important, that we must look at all aspects of our life. And that's where the psychologist comes in to help us to develop healthier coping mechanisms so that we don't go back into that space again.
Definitely. So let's speak about postnatal depression, right? Firstly, can postnatal depression actually be controlled?
Okay. I want you to, when it comes to postnatal depression, it's very normal for most women to experience some sort of postnatal blues. I'm sure, Sreya, you've heard about it, where women feel a little bit down after the second or third day. You must remember, they're coming out of having had a birthing process. Their hormones are all over the place. They have this new baby in the world. They have other responsibilities as well.
You feel down, you feel weepy.
Absolutely. And it's very, very normal. So that sadness, that little bit of fears, that anxiety, that tiredness, all of that's very normal. But there's research shows that about 20% of moms can go into a postpartum depression, which is beyond just that baby blues that we initially experience. So you see the worsening of those symptoms. So the sadness and the fears and the lack of energy and the fatigue and the difficulty concentrating, all of that start to get worse to a point where it becomes a full-blown depression. Now you ask me, can it be controlled? Look, we need to put coping skills in place. So it's very important that support from family, friends, is important to prevent moms from getting into that space of postpartum depression. So I think some of our old wives' remedies, for example, where we stay in bed for those 40 days, have wisdom in it, you know, where your mom comes and they help you, or you go to your mom's house. Those things have wisdom in it because there's family support and it prevents the individual from slipping into a place of depression. But nonetheless, some people just do go into that space of depression because of all these numerous factors and the hormonal imbalances in the body. And the difficulty with that is that often mums don't realize that they're in that space. Sometimes we think it's normal. You think, you know, this is just normal. I have a new baby and this is the way I'm supposed to feel. But actually, it isn't normal. You can go into a deep, dark space where it's very hard to come out of that sinking feeling of feeling low and down. We need medication to assist and support women who are in that space.
So most people say postnatal depression is normal to a certain extent, right? But then you have people that go on for 4 months, sometimes 1 year, and then you realize, okay, this can't be how it's meant. This is not the way it's meant to be. You can understand maybe a month.
Yes.
So at what point do you realize, like, I'm in serious trouble, I need to help myself?
I think that when it starts to affect your functioning, your ability to function as normally. Okay, so when you start to see that I can't get out of bed anymore, I can't bath my baby, I don't want to be with the baby, I'm feeling down all the time, I'm tearful all the time, I'm crying, there's no energy at all, I can't get up, I don't even want to bath myself. When you start to see the symptoms of, where these symptoms are starting to affect your normal functioning, and people around you are starting to ask and question, what's going on, why are you behaving in this way, or why are you feeling this way, that's when we need to get help. We need to get help. And the difficulty, Surya, sorry, with postpartum is that often women feel like they have to be strong and they have to cope and they have to deal with things and they just got to get on with it. And they're not acknowledging what's happening in their body, and that's when it gets even worse. And they don't cry out for help, or they don't ask for the help. They slip into a further and further depression where sometimes they need to be hospitalized.
Yes.
So those signs and symptoms that are there, we have to, once we start seeing it starting to affect us, we need to go out there and get the help for ourselves. Because if we don't do it, then we're going to slip into a deeper depression, and it will affect our whole family structure, because a lot of women are the heads of their households in many ways, or they run these households. So it's very important that we go out and seek that help. Even if it's just asking, going for one session to a therapist and saying, you know what, is this normal? This is what I'm feeling. It's okay to ask. Even if you're not in a depression, that's okay, but you clarified your thoughts. Or you read up, or you go and research a little bit and find out if this is normal.
Why is it then that only some people, like most people, wouldn't know if they're going to suffer from postnatal depression? Like some people that suffer from it have never had a history of depression. So the first time ever they experience this is after they give birth. So it hits them with a bang because they never anticipated feeling like this, right? So why is it that some people get it and others are just, it doesn't affect them at all?
It links back to those things that I had spoken to you about initially, coping mechanisms, personality, how you appraise a situation, the kind of birthing experience can also impact on you going into a depressed state. For example, let me talk about my own experience. I'm a mom of 4. So my first child I had at 28. I prepared for the baby, went to all the lovely classes, and had this whole idealized view of what motherhood was going to be. You know, I'm just going to slip into this process of motherhood, and I'm going to give natural birth, and the breastfeeding is going to be so amazing, and all of those wonderful, wonderful things. And when I did, when I went through labor, it was over 2 days, and eventually it resulted in a Caesar. So there already, my need to be perfect and to have the perfect birth eventually was kind of already, I already had a traumatic birth, and it impacted on how I saw myself And then my baby didn't latch naturally as I had expected when we had to do breastfeeding. And again, it felt like, is there something wrong with me? What did I do wrong? How come this is not happening the way it's supposed to? And so definitely, you see, the traumatic birth as well as the difficulties during that period impacted on how I saw myself and how I appraised the situation. So being a perfectionist and wanting things to work out in a perfect way didn't serve my interest. And therefore, I felt really depressed and down. But having my fourth child just 4 months ago, it was completely different because I had no expectations. And the baby had jaundice, and it went in my stride, and I just went with it. And there was no feelings of depression or feeling of inadequacy. So I think what we've got to realize is that it varies from individual to individual. It depends on your support structures. It depends on how much you've worked on yourself. It also depends on your life experience. So it will affect you based on all of these factors. It's not just one thing that's going to make you, slip into depression or not slip into depression. And also remember the genetic. If someone in your family has had a history of depression, you are more prone to becoming depressed. Then. Doesn't make sense.
So how do we, help victims of depression? Because most of the time, I think when a person is suffering with depression, it's bad. But the added, what makes it worse is people's reaction. And sometimes we make insensitive comments or we tell them to snap out of it. And generally, it's the husband. The husband's always you're just behaving like this. It comes from lack of understanding. So how is it that we can help make a depressed person feel better instead of making them go deeper into this hole?
Sureya, you'll be surprised how many men are affected by depression. I think we don't hear as much about it because they don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many men out there who suffer in silence. And sometimes we don't see the depression as a depressed mood, but it comes out as irritability and aggression. Because I can't be sitting and being sad and moping around, but I've just got to function, and sometimes that happens with lots of males. I'm going off a little bit. So how do we help these individuals who are depressed? So I think what's important is that when we see these signs and symptoms, to acknowledge it, okay, and then to get professional help. Professional help, we can go to a GP who can assist and diagnose, a psychiatrist ideally, because they are specialists in the field of depression. So ideally we'd like you to go to a psychiatrist. And the moment people who suffer from depression hear psychiatry, they might get afraid and say, do you think I'm mad? Is that why you're taking me to a psychiatrist?
Yes.
And there's a stigma attached to it.
I'm not mad. I'm not crazy.
Yeah. But the reality is that it doesn't mean that you're mad if you go and see a psychiatrist. When you go have a skin rash, you go to your GP and he might or might not help. But preferably you'll go to a dermatologist because he's a specialist in the field. So similarly, when you have depression, you can go to your GP. Yes, they have a broad general knowledge. But we'll go to a psychiatrist because they have specific knowledge. And they can tweak the medication accordingly because they have a vast knowledge of the medication that's out there. That's why we'll go to the Rolls Royce of doctors when it comes to depression. Because if you can afford it, go to the people who specialize in the field. So that's why I would say go to a psychiatrist if you can afford it. And in conjunction with that, see a therapist, see a psychologist who will help deal with the cause of the depression. What were the triggers for the depression? So it could have been a marital issue, it could have been a financial issue, it could be your coping mechanism, it could be your lifestyle that needs to be tweaked and talked about. So those aspects, that combination seems to be most useful in dealing with depression, according to research. So a combination of both, not necessarily just one. And if you feel uncomfortable going to a psychiatrist, go and see the psychologist. Go and talk to the psychologist. And your psychologist will tell you if you need to see a psychiatrist. So you don't necessarily have to go to a psychiatrist first, or speak to your GP, and your GP will tell you if you need to go and see a psychiatrist. So that would be how you would help them. And also in terms of support structures, there are support groups that are out there. If you there's the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, and they have a whole list of support groups that they have, and a lot of information on depression and the different types of depression as well.
Okay, that was very, very informative. Jazakallah, Hanifa, it was such a pleasure speaking to you and very informative. There's a lot of things that I've learned, and I'm sure the listeners as well. And we look forward to having you again on our program, inshallah.
Jazakallah for all your time and giving me the opportunity.
Amen. Okay, so there you have it, the wonderful interview with Hanifa Ibrahim. If you have any more questions, you can send it to me. You can email me on suraya@radioislamlive.com. Join me next week for a segment on bullying, but this one is related to adults. So adult bullying and social media bullying in particular. It is going to be an interesting one. So do join us next week, inshallah. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.